You're listening to a Creative Disturbance podcast for Indie Game Nation. I'm Josephine Porter.
And I'm Andrew Holschel.
Andrew, tell us a little bit about yourself.
I started working in the game industry in 2010 with Interceptor Entertainment. We were a group of modders at that point, and we now work under 3D Realms.
Cool. So where did your involvement with Interceptor originate?
We were on a Gearbox forum when we were working on Duke Nukem 3D Reloaded. Well, they were. I contacted Frederick Schreiber, who is the CEO for Interceptor Entertainment, about trying to do some music remakes for him, because he was working on essentially a complete rebuild of Duke Nukem 3D and the Unreal Engine 3. What I was working on was just a theme for him at that point for Duke Nukem 3D Reloaded, because I was really interested. So I sent him an email and said, hey, I'm going to make you a theme. Use it if you want. No big deal. He says, okay, no problem. I get back to him about 2 days later with a theme. He really likes it. Asks me if I can do some more stuff with him and to join in the team. At that point, it was just a modding group of about 3 or 4 people. We would get on Skype. It was all digital. We would work together. Pretty much from there, we proposed it over to Gearbox. And, you know, the story from there where they said, hey, you know, good idea. Works out. But during the end, whenever they were getting closer to Duke Nukem Forever release, they kind of put a halt on things a little bit. That's how it started. After that, we got in touch with Apogee and started doing Rise of the Triad.
And what was it like working with on Rise of the Triad?
Rise of the Triad was really cool, specifically because that was the first title that I'd ever work on that was shipped. I didn't know it at the time, and in the middle of development, there were some times where I was like, is this going to make it? Rise of the Triad was a lot of fun, specifically because that was my first introduction to the professional side of the industry. We were working as a modding team, just having fun, you know, no money, just, hey, let's put something out and see what happens, see if we get some jobs out of it. We did. Whenever we started on Rise of the Triad, I remember specifically Terry Nagy coming on board and saying, hey, we want to use you as the audio lead, but we need to hear what you're capable of producing. So I sent over the Duke Nukem 3D Reloaded tracks, which he said, meh, you know, they're okay. It's like, but we need to see if you can do it on a professional level. These are demo takes. There was no money involved at that point. It took about 2 or 3 days out, took a day off of work at that time, and literally just pretty much locked myself in my room, created what was the Rise of the Triad 2013, the theme for it, which was Going Down the Fast Way. Sent it over to them. It was about 3/4 of the way done. Fred loved it. Fred was like, this is sweet. And Terry responds back on the email and says, hey, can we have a chat real quick? So we get on to the Skype conference and he says, yeah, it's all right, but it needs some work. So I was like, okay, you know, I can work with this. That was a lot of work, but I can work with this. So from then on, me and Terry worked back and forth on the music, pretty much, with Fred coming in the middle saying, hey, this is what we should do for this song. This is what we should do for this. But for the most part, he would give me a couple ideas and then just say, go crazy. And that was awesome. That was my first introduction to the industry with Rise of the Triad. And it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of work. But in the end, totally worth it.
You probably spent a lot of time early in the morning to like 3, 4 a.m. working and then going into work the next day.
Oh my gosh, yes. We would crunch, like during crunch mode, which there was about 4 or 5 of them. It feels like the entire development was crunch mode, honestly. But there was about 3 or 4 moments of 2-week periods where I would get about maybe 3 to 4 hours of sleep a night. Those guys were probably doing double that. They totally have me in that court. They were doing some crazy, crazy time, especially Fred. It just comes down to the point where, hey, you know, do you want to do it enough? Do you have what it takes to push yourself physically, mentally, everything to get to the end product and see your idea come to life? But yeah, totally. No sleep.
So how many people actually worked on Rise of the Triad?
I want to say between 38 and 45. That number could be a lot lower. It could be about 30 to 32. But there were some people here and there that would come in and do some assets, and then they would leave. Some people that were there for about half the time and got jobs right in the middle of it, you know. It wasn't a huge funded project, so there would be people kind of coming in and coming out. But the people that stayed core are pretty much working on everything right now that we're doing with the other titles that we're working on.
It's interesting, even with smaller groups of people working on games, at the crunch time, the stress, the burden is still the same, even with AAA games, you know.
For sure. Crunch mode isn't called crunch mode because it's easy. It sucks. Whenever you see everybody's work all come together, it's amazing. It's awesome.
Totally worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. Every single time.
Tell us about your production process and how long it usually takes for you to finish a soundtrack or even the sound design, because I know you did a bit of sound design for Rise of the Triad.
Yeah, I did probably 25% to 30% of the sound design for Rise of the Triad. Fred did a lot more. We had a lot of sound packs that we would use that we would modify. He would send something over to me and say, hey, make this sound a little bit more, blah, blah, blah. The end result would be something like a machine gun or bazooka. But as far as the step-by-step with making a song, I'll do that first. First, what I'll do is I'll open up Studio One, kind of just get an idea, drag an instrument, whether it be Massive, whether it be something from the Kontakt library, whatever it be, an 8DO product, whatever. I'll drag something over for the first idea that I have, which is normally drums. I get an idea for some kind of drum beat in my head, and I'll start there. After I've got just like maybe a 4-bar measure, I'll try and layer on top of that. Strings, guitar, bass, synth, maybe soundscapes, something to that degree. And from there, what I'll do is I'll actually take that entire 4-bar measure, copy it over 2, 3, 4 times, and then just start ad-libbing over the instrument that I think should be lead. And then I'll pull that entire section over to the right of the session, and I'll do something else. So I'll grab about 3 or 4 of these, and then I'll say, okay, how can I glue all this stuff together? Because this all fits, but I have to figure out exactly how I should crossfade these in. What should I have to be the glue in between each part? And, you know, maybe an introduction, maybe an ending. Maybe it doesn't have an ending, maybe it just loops. Most of the time it loops. That's pretty much the process. But it normally takes me, I would say, when I'm on a roll, I can do it all within 24 hours. When I'm not on a roll, up to 3 days, sometimes a week. But the key idea here is, if it takes that long, it takes that long. There is no pushing art. There is no, hey, we have to get this out here. I'm very thankful that Fred and Mike understand that, and they don't push on my buttons to say, hey, we need this now. They pretty much give me free rein. They say, hey, we need a theme for this game. They'll give me a date. But if I contact them and I say, hey, this is taking a little bit longer just because, you know, hey, I'm not inspired yet. Fred will do something like send me more artwork or send me, video footage of something that they just got done with animation side. A lot of times what he'll do is he'll send me actual compositions that he likes, like from Hans Zimmer or, you know, someone else. Most of the time it's Hans Zimmer because he's a freak about that dude. Which he's great. He's awesome. But he'll send me references for everything. But front to back, yeah, normally 24 hours to 3 days, sometimes a week.
And that's just like for one particular song?
One particular song.
So while you're working on the music or the sound design, are they also simultaneously working on the game in terms of like animation and gameplay?
Yeah, everyone is always working. There's a headquarters that we have in Denmark that's a 2-story office with about 5 to 7 guys that work out of there, I want to say. You know, one day, hopefully I'll be over there. But for right now, I like where I'm at in Texas. And I enjoy a digital workflow. So everybody's always working simultaneously on the same project. 3 guys will be working on animation. A couple guys will be working on 3D art. Some will be set dressing levels. Some will be, you know, working on, coding. There's certain areas that are gray to me. While I'm working on a track or a theme, you've got my buddy Ewald, who's doing animations. You've got Fred, who, God, he could do anything at any given time. If he sees an area of opportunity, he jumps on it. He'll even work with me on music and sit in on sessions digitally. But yeah, everybody is always working. And at the end of the day, what we'll do is we'll upload all of our work. We'll commit it in the engine, upload it, and then save it. And there's an actual certain type of file system they have set up where if somebody uploads something over top of someone's work, we can actually go back, restore it back to that, and then the other person can upload their data again, and then we're good. So there's no, it's like fail safe. It's dummy proof.
So what's your background in music? How did you transition from where you were before to where you are now?
Oh, I play metal. No. I started playing guitar whenever I was 12, 13 years old. When my dad first got me my first guitar. You're going to love this. It was a black, sparkly Dan Electro guitar. So it was not very metal at all. It was so bad. I still have it. Thank God. It's a reminder to be humble. but I started playing when I was like 12 or 13 years old. Found some guys at my school. Found a drummer, Michael Aguero. Found another guitar player, Jason Bates. And a bass player at the time who was Joey Broderick. And he would actually, at the time, he would only help us load in and out from gigs, which were normally parties. You know, we weren't old enough to get in the clubs. But we did this for years. Members would go in and out. Mainly those four guys were there. And we would have another guitar player that would show up every now and then. But we did this for a long time, and we still are. Jason's no longer with us, and neither is Michael. But, you know, it doesn't change anything. We're still the same group of guys who just want to play music. But along that way, coming from 12 years old all the way up to 27 now, I was there for the infancy of digital recording. That really interested me. Finding a way that you could just hook up a certain program to your computer and a microphone, whether it be just like those terrible banana-looking USB microphones from back in the day that were awful. I think it was like Logitech had those back in the day. But trying to mic up cabinets with those, trying to mic drums. I was doing that when I was a kid. Trying to capture the sound of a room with a tiny USB microphone, which is impossible. That was me. I was trying to do that. And I was lucky enough that a buddy of mine pirated a copy of Cakewalk Sonar version 1.3 or version 1.2 or something. And he gave it to me. I was like, man, this is amazing. You know, obviously I didn't have the money back in the day. He just gave it to me on a disc. I didn't know they pirated it. I wouldn't have cared anyways. I was like 13 years old. Okay? But not saying go out and steal your stuff. So years and years and years and years and years of figuring out, hey, you can't use a USB to mic microphone to mic everything. You need an interface. You need microphones. You need stands. You need cables. You need good analog to digital conversion. Excuse me. And you need some high-powered software and a good computer. You know, thousands of dollars later of my own money that I would, one way or another, mow lawns or do chores or something around the neighborhood for other people to save up money for. I got my first interface, first microphone, and I got my first piece of software, which was a legitimate version of Cakewalk, a Pentium 2 computer, a condenser microphone, I want to say it was an Octava or an Octavia, and finding out now that those are actually lawsuit models, I probably got sold a fake microphone. Getting those first things together, and then actually recording, you know, my own guitar amp and everything, was a total eye-opening experience, because you understand that, hey, I could actually do this. I'm doing this right now, but I could do this with better gear. I could actually make this sound even better. But my thought on it, whenever I first sat down with it, was, why should I need the better gear? Why should I have to spend $2,000 on a compressor or a preamp to make my sound be that much better? I bet you anything in this software, I can make this work. And sure enough, you know, years later, here we are, and they're converting any type of analog gear that you have, especially Universal Audio, buying rights from API and Neve, and making the stuff in VST plugins. So, yeah, you almost can. Now, there's certain moments where you can't, but, you know, there are exceptions to the rule of everything. But years of that made me want to work in the game industry, because side by side while I was doing that, the downtime stuff was always playing Mortal Kombat and playing Duke 3D and Doom and all this other stuff, and thinking, man, this sounds arrogant as hell, but thinking, God, I could do such a better job if I just had the right tools. Yeah, it kind of sounds, you know, I didn't know that all they had to work with at the time was MIDI, thinking, why don't they put a rock soundtrack behind it? You know, why is, you know, Bobby Prince just using these MIDI sounds, not knowing that that's the only thing that's built into the code at the time? You know, I had no idea. But I was thinking, man, you need some metal in here. You need something hard rock whenever you're blowing people's heads off, you know, whatever you're doing in the game with a first-person shooter. You need something fast. You know, as you grow up and you learn, oh, that's what they had to work with. Well, they did a pretty damn good job for that. But now here I am. That's what I'm trying to do.
Thanks for listening. Join us next week for part 2.